2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. In the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Don Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls. You can ask your questions on the text line at 57500, or you can call us at 801-575-8255. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm hopeful for the day when we don't have to socially distance anymore.
I am also.
A little bit rainy today. I can't believe how much the temperature dropped.
Well, what's amazing to me is it dropped, and I think our low was around 40 or 42, and then next week we're supposed to be up to 93.
It's that time of year, though.
It is.
With those variable temperatures.
Yep.
Hopefully nothing was threatened by these lower temperatures, though.
You know, I don't think so. The tomatoes are not supposed to go below around 50, and so it's not that they're going to die, but they might get set back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also the weather where we go down into 40 and then up to 90 and then drop back down. This is the weather that causes blossom end rot in tomatoes.
Okay, so people are going to have to take some extra precautions, I guess.
Well, there's not much they can do.
Well, come on. I want to be able to do something. I have no control of anything.
Cover the tomatoes at night, and it will help a little bit.
Okay.
But what will happen, the temperature swings and the rain and then drying out also causes the plant not to be able to take in enough calcium from the soil. And it causes those black bottoms on the tomatoes to where it's like a three-quarters tomato with a black, leathery spot on the bottom.
Does that last all season once that begins to happen?
It diminishes as the season progresses, and so your first tomatoes are much more likely to have blossom end rot,
mm-hmm.
but the later tomatoes are far less likely. If you're getting blossom end rot on your tomatoes in mid-September that are ripening, that's more due to irrigation to where the tomatoes got too dry and then too wet. And then too dry. And so you need to keep them evenly moist. But the other factor that's harder to control for is just these temperature swings.
Right. So the only thing you can do is protect them in the evenings with some sort of wall of water or something.
Yeah, cover the soil with some grass to help even out the irrigation and reduce evaporation to keep the soil moisture levels a little more even. But beyond that, it's just part of tomatoes. Don't waste your money on blossom end rot sprays. Our soils are up to a third calcium, and we just don't need them, and the blossom end rot we get here is just weather-related and irrigation-related.
Right. Well, the plant of the week is a rose of Sharon called Lil' Kim, and what a beautiful flower. I'm looking at a white flower with this red inside, or centerpiece. What a gorgeous plant, but that's not the reason. Not the beauty wasn't the main reason you want to talk about it. This is just one that doesn't get quite as tall as the others.
No. A lot of our modern yards are just, we're having to be more efficient with the land because we're honestly running out of open space. And so a lot of the newer developments are planning those to where you do have open public park areas to play in things, but your actual yard is smaller. And so it's becoming more and more necessary to find dwarf plants and smaller plants that will fit. And this Lil Kim Rose of Sharon is one that only gets around 4 feet high and wide, but it looks like a standard Rose of Sharon, which will double or triple the size.
So where do we need to plant this? This is a full sun, or is this a
full sun? If it gets in shade, it just is sad. It doesn't flower a lot, but if it's native to Korea and those areas in Asia, but it's very popular in hot, dry areas. And so it's happiest if it can get really hot sun and it gets a lot more flowers if it's in full sun situations.
So this is one that would do best or do really well if you have that west exposure or something that
west
gets a lot
or
of
south,
hot sun.
It is perfectly happy on a west or south exposure in most situations.
So what kind of watering do we need for this?
Once it's established, it's actually relatively drought hardy. I know that in most situations when I see this particular species with yellow leaves, that it's most likely being overwatered because it tolerates our soil quite well. And so once it's established, deep watered once a week, and so if you have a smart controller on your irrigation system, hopefully you can set it up on a shrubs and tree zone, and your controller will water once a week or so and make sure that water penetrates about 9 inches to a foot deep.
Anything else special to this plant that we need to know?
You can shear it, or you can give it a haircut, or renewal prune it is what I'd prefer, but it blooms on new growth. And so giving it a haircut or some pruning in the spring actually will increase the number of flowers you'll get in July and August and September.
Okay, I haven't checked the Facebook page. Is this one already up on the Facebook page
it
for
is.
Our listeners? Okay.
Since Caitlin's out merrymaking somewhere, I went ahead and put all of our...
I don't know if camping in the rain is merrymaking.
Well,
I hope she has a good time.
Yes. So I went ahead and put all the plants up on our Facebook page.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much for doing so. So if people want to know more about the Little Kim, you can find it on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. This morning, we are sponsored by Ivory Homes. Like last week, we are taking a look at some gorgeous home sites, this time in Harriman. And we have Doug Babcock with us from Ivory Homes. Good morning, Doug.
Hi, Maria. How are we doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you. And I'm hoping people will get us up on the KSL News Radio app as well so they can see the virtual home tour as soon as we're done speaking. Because this, I'm looking at a beautiful room right now. Now, tell us about this. You have two home sites in Harriman. Tell us about those.
Yeah, we actually have three. The two that we're going to primarily talk about today, the first one's Juniper Estates. It's a community that's kind of become one of the premier Harriman locations. They're quarter-acre or larger home sites. They're going to start in the mid-400s, and it's just turned into an absolutely beautiful place to be. Unique, a little bit quieter than maybe some of the areas, other areas of the valley, and yet still incredibly close to a lot of the things that families want to be near. The other community that we're doing is called Hidden Oaks. It's brand new. We just barely released it. Hidden Oaks is going to be on a little bit of a smaller home site, but we're trying to hit an incredible price point. They're going to start in the high 380s, which is pretty tricky to get a single family home where you're not attached to somebody else to in the valley of Salt Lake, right, in general, but really in the city of Harriman too. So both really absolutely beautiful communities. And then for that family who really wants something unique up on the in the upper foothills of Harriman, we have a community called the Cove Harriman Springs, where we're building on larger lots and some just absolutely gorgeous estate-style homes. So lots of different things to choose from, really.
I took a ride out to Harriman to see my brother's home last week, and I was just astounded at the beauty out there. I wasn't really familiar with Harriman, but the views are really quite incredible.
Breathtaking, aren't they? Gorgeous.
They really
views,
are.
Panoramic of everywhere that you look. You're just surrounded on all sides by mountains.
For those folks who aren't familiar with Ivory Homes, tell us what sets it apart from other home builders?
Wow, how much time do you have?
I know, right? Give us a couple of the basics here.
there are some other good builders in the state, but what really separates Ivory Homes head and shoulders apart is it really starts at the very top. Ivory Homes, the Ivory family, they're innovators when it comes to building, and they never stand still. They're constantly looking for ways to improve. Ever since I've been familiar with Ivory from the very beginning, it seems like every year... they re-innovate and they reinvent themselves in what they're willing to do, whether it's energy efficiency or warranty or customer satisfaction. Right now, there's an incredible push to be more eco-friendly, so green towards the environment. But really what sets Ivory apart is that they're not here just to build shelter. They want to build Utah, and they want to build a home that is recognizable and truly builds the state, yeah.
Well, I know that our greenhouse listeners are very familiar with Ivory Homes because you sponsor our green tip every spring, and we know that you want to be water-wise and do all of those things that make a home more efficient and really make us better stewards of our environment.
Absolutely. That's a lot of what we're all focused on right now, isn't it?
Yeah. And now you have an open house that begins at 11.
Absolutely.
And is that at both of your home sites?
You know, it's not. So right now, because Hidden Oaks is just barely opening up, we don't quite have our model out there. We're doing all of our sales out of our Juniper Estates community.
Okay.
But we can work the entire, well, all three of our communities from Juniper Estate. The address out there is 6432 West Hollister Way in Harriman. And Hollister Way is about 3800 South.
All right. And then for those of our listeners who have got us up on the KSL News Radio app, right now you're going to show them a virtual tour. And Doug will talk with you again in just a few minutes. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Maria.
And again, our program sponsored by Ivory Homes. You can text us your questions this morning at 57500. You can call us at 575-8255.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the Greenhouse Show on this rainy Saturday morning. Maria and Ton taking your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. This morning, the program is sponsored by Ivory Homes, and right now a virtual tour is underway on our webcam. You can find that webcam at kslnewsradio.com, and this is at their one of their Harriman home sites, Juniper Estates, at 6432 Hollister Way, and an open house beginning there at 11. Ton, let's begin with our questions this morning. We have a couple of texters who texted in bright and early, so let's get to their questions first. The first one, person really trying to deal with morning glory. They want to know how to kill morning glory. I've tried for years, and I'm telling you, it's pretty tricky. And they also want to know if a weed burner will kill that morning glory.
Well, a weed burner is just a funner way to hoe it out. Maybe because you're burning it. So you need to be careful with weed burners, because I've seen several times where somebody will get in a dry field and then start burning stuff, and all of a sudden that dry field, all the dry grasses and weeds are like nature's gasoline, and you can start fires. And so you need to be careful with it. But if you're on a gravel area or something, it will set it back by burning the tops off, but in essence you're just cultivating it with flames. And so it will take anywhere from 7 to 9 years, about every 2 to 3 weeks, of burning that stuff off to actually control it. So if you've got years to do it, yes. As far as sprays, there's really not a once and done spray that's going to just eliminate bindweed. And so some newer chemistries are out that will do a better job. One is called Quinclorac. There's a product called Q4 Plus, or if you get like an ortho Weed Be Gone with crabgrass control, that has Quinclorac in it. And Quinclorac seems to do a pretty good job at suppressing it, but you cannot use that in your garden. And so in your garden areas, if you're done gardening for the year, if it's spring and you haven't planted, I would just use glyphosate and use a spreader sticker with it. And that will set it back for 6 or 8 weeks and slow it down. And then once you get your garden going, you pretty much just have to hand pull or hoe it out or something. So there's really no good once and done solution. This is something that if you have bindweed in your yard, you can diminish it quite a bit over a period of 3 or 4 years, but you're never going to totally get rid of it.
You want to make sure it doesn't take over though either, or you're never going to get rid of it.
You're not. And if you just let it go and don't maintain things, it will just take over.
Okay, next texter, and then we'll get to our callers, says, their watermelon seed packet says, to plant the seeds in hills, how tall of a dirt hill do I need to construct, or does planting in a hill just mean something different?
Planting on a hill can mean a few different things, but generally, if you are planting your watermelon, you want to make a wide, kind of cone-shaped, flat-topped hill, maybe 4 to 6 inches tall. And then you put your seeds in the middle, and what I like to do is just make that top a little bit concave so that I can get water in there to help the, you know, for the seeds. And once it comes up, you can still put water in there, but watermelon actually is native to fairly dry areas in the wild relatives it has in Africa, and is perfectly happy once it's been up and going for a couple of months, being irrigated about once a week so that water penetrates about 6 inches into the soil.
So when they say hill, they really mean a 4 to 6 inch mound.
Yeah, but not just a little dinky one. You want this probably 18 inches wide up a little bit, because one way to kill your squash is to drown them out in your watermelons and things. And so when it says plant on a hill, you do 3 or 4 seeds and then put it on there. The other thing you can do is make a furrow. And planting on a hill can also mean plant on the top of a furrow. And when I do squash and melons and cucumbers and things, my furrows are going to be probably 18 inches wide and maybe a foot to 18 inches tall. And that way I flatten the top off again, and I'll run drip or drip tape that I can just designate a hole where it's irrigated. But it's good to have those seeds elevated because they do need just a little bit of drainage.
Okay, let's take a call this morning from Gordy in Clearfield. Good morning, Gordy. Gordy, are you there?
Yes.
What is your question? Yes. Good morning.
I've got asparagus questions. I read that two places that using the old shredded up asparagus fronds is a good idea, and then I read also it's not a good idea. Oh, to mulch around the asparagus, and another article said no, it's not a good idea because of asparagus rust. So for our area, what's the verdict?
Well, the old fronds, I don't think you're really going to run into a lot of problems unless you've already had disease in there. But it's often recommended that if you're going to mulch it, you could use some grass clippings or something else. And personally, I don't think there's enough fronds there to even just to do the job. And so there's so few of them, I personally would probably just clean them up and compost them or send them to green waste.
I also mulch heavily with grass clippings just to keep the moisture in.
But, yeah, and so, you know, 2 to 3 inches of grass clippings are going to be fine. That asparagus is quite drought hardy, and so once it's established, it'll be happy with a deep soaking every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I also have some asparagus that they're just super bushy and they don't get very high. Is that a disease, or is that...
They're less common, but there are several viruses that can get into them. Sometimes insects can stunt them, but you just may have a variety that doesn't get that tall. And so in the spring, you harvest. If it's past 3 years old, you can harvest for a couple of months, and you stop when the new spears start coming up about pencil width.
Very good. Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Gordy,
I appreciate your assistance.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. This morning, we are sponsored by Ivory Homes, and they have an open house that will get underway at 11 o'clock at 6432 Hollister Way. That, again, is in Harriman. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.